Welcome to StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome everybody. This is Joe from StartupRad.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany. Right now I'm here in Frankfurt, close to Westhafen, which is, as you can tell, a former harbor, which was converted into residential and office buildings. And I'm here for the simple reason that there's an InsurTech located here, Thinksurance. Welcome.
Thank you.
Can you introduce yourself to our viewers?
Yeah, of course. So my name is Florian Brokamp. I'm one of the co-founders of Thinksurance and CEO of the company. And happy to say a little bit more about what we are doing here in Frankfurt.
When we talked before the interview, you told me that you're basically not really an insurance company. You're not really a broker, but you're actually in the middle of that. Before we get into the details, can you tell us a little bit about your life, how you actually got there? Because I would assume you don't get out of university and say, oh, that's what I want to do.
No, actually, it's probably like everyone that you ask about insurance. It's really more about I just somewhat got stuck into it, and that was the case. I studied both law and economics here in Germany, and then went to McKinsey Management Consulting. And after a couple of years at McKinsey doing a lot of digital stuff, I thought, okay, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to found something and let's go. And then I bumped into a lot of people, a lot of different entrepreneurs that have much more experience about that. And they all said, okay, look at this, look at that, and so on. And then I met some guys that were very successful in insurance. They said, insurance, that's very interesting. I was like, insurance, I don't really think that's something for me. It's like, yeah, look at it. That's really something that you should have a closer look. And I was like, yeah, okay, maybe I do. And at that time, it was really kicking off that industry, and it was really starting to get going. And I was really looking at it and said, okay, sounds interesting. And I started it, and I called two friends of mine that I worked together with at McKinsey, and we're like, okay, let's give it a try. And so we started it. And then over time, it's been over 4 years now, it became quite successful. And now we're launching, we're looking at the first other countries that we're expanding to after being quite market leading in Germany. And so it proved me wrong. They proved me wrong that insurance is much more interesting than I actually thought.
We are here because my interest in you got triggered for the simple reason you raised venture capital. I do remember 13 million euros.
Yep.
And actually, at this point, but I'm not an insurance guy, I could not tell what you guys are actually doing. Can you explain it for like an insurance layman, what you guys are actually doing?
Yeah, definitely, I can do that. I actually need to do that quite often, because most people that I talk to that ask me, what do you do? I typically start with like, okay, we're a tech company. And then you get them interested. So rather don't tell too early that you're doing something with insurance. It typically lowers the attention quite a bit. And so we're a tech company. We're a tech platform in between a classical insurance company and whatever distributor that is selling commercial insurances. So in this case, it might be a typical broker that you know, might be a tied agent that only sells insurance from like Allianz or Zurich or AXA, whatever. And we're kind of like in between those two parties and connect them. And we're kind of like a technology enabler for both of them, because insurance company is typically not a tech company, and a typical broker or distributor, even online brokers, most of them don't have that much money and time to invest into these APIs or into this the interfaces that you would need to create with insurers to kind of like get all the product world and all the communication that you need between those two parties. And therefore, we're in between multiplying to both sides, kind of like a two-sided marketplace, matching supply and demand.
But you guys are doing much more than just WhatsApp, right?
Definitely. Yeah, so it's really, we're starting in this process from the first consulting, from first making sure that that you consult your client right, so from a distributor perspective. Then we help him what kind of products I need to offer him, liability insurance or legal insurance or whatever. And then we tell him which insurer actually would cover that risk. Then we have the API with insurer getting the quote from him.
Even if this is special for B2B insurance, because you have big risks, you have quite specific risks, not just like life insurance. To very simplify it, one person has just one life and it's almost the same, but it's totally different if you're like a car sales outlet that has a lot of cars out there, and when the garage burns up, it has to be insured, as opposed to like a really big industrial conglomerate that needs to insure like big industrial complexes, right?
Yeah. And so actually, when you think about commercial insurances and businesses, you have around, let's say, 50 different product lines. And product lines, it means liability. So someone falls over a cable or so on. Mm-hmm. But it can be even much, much bigger if the product that you sell just hurts someone out there that's using it. That would also be in this area. Up to, like, let's say, cyber or legal expense or whatever. So that 50 different products just for one potential business. And then within one business, you have, we know around, let's say, 1500, 1800 different professions. So a profession can be the plumber next door, can be the huge industrial conglomerate, can be a barber next door. So can be everything in between. And a barber not equals a barber. A barber can be one man shop or can be like with different franchise stores and so on. So even in that, it's quite complicated. So you can see you can build up a huge matrix of complexity.
Just a question out of pure curiosity. Does it make a difference for the insurance of a barbershop if he or she does shaving or not?
shaving is not relevant for the premium, but it makes a difference if you kind of like do the needling, peeling stuff, where you actually really go into the go into the skin of someone, then it makes difference. But shaving is typically not part of the questionnaire.
Okay, and when you guys then you help to structure this, okay, mm-hmm. And so an insurance broker, an IFA on one side can find it. And what do you do for the other side, like the insurance companies?
Yeah. So in this area, I mean, this is part of this matchmaking. So this broker has this risk, and he wants to find out, okay, what do I actually, who can I ask for it, and what does it cost? And this is the first time when we are really giving a certain special value for an insurer. Because what happened typically is that you started with kind of like an email or like fax. Yes, there's still fax machines being used. So I didn't know. And so it's really an offline process. And then you need special underwriters, or you have people there, specialists for calculating or quoting a simple barbershop for €120 or $150. And so that's something not
efficient. We should say, like in insurance speak, it's when you're underwriting a risk, you're covering it as an insurer. Then it is insured, right?
Yeah, so the underwriting is actually kind of like a risk assessment of the risk, and then making sure that the premium is, from a technical perspective, actually pricing the risk right. Because in the end, I mean, it's in insurance, basically, you need a lot of different risks. So they cover each other, basically, because you have risks that don't have any damages, because one damage would be enough to basically take all the premiums of the other 100 premiums. And therefore, you need to make sure that it all ends up to a total coverage in the portfolio.
Mm-hmm. I see. What is for you the most interesting stuff you are insuring? I assume you're not insuring like big industrial conglomerates that are destruction by alien forces or something. But
not yet.
What is the most fancy or interesting stuff you guys are doing there? What are you seeing there?
So basically, we're getting more and more complex from risks that our clients are bringing to us. And I would say the most complex was around, it's a conglomerate, industrial conglomerate of, I think they make around 50 million revenues. So it's quite large already, which has been digitized via our platform. And this was probably the most interesting part. But of course, we see a lot of startups coming to us because obviously I'm a part of the startup world, and therefore I know some people that come to me and say, can you help? And I typically say, we are not a broker, but we can of course enable your broker, or we can connect you with brokers and whatever. And so basically we're helping them on this. And so we see a lot of different stuff. What was the latest that I heard? It was a cryptocurrency asset manager or something like that. And that was really something where the insurers, which are really, really old school, said, okay, what is this cryptocurrency stuff? I actually have no clue. And that was probably one of the most interesting parts.
Mm-hmm. And on the other side, you're working with like all insurance companies that are permitted to do business in Germany?
Yeah. Basically, we have all the relevant insurers on our side. What we're doing with them is, it starts with this, what is that, the simple quotation of the risk. Just writing a price to it. But on the other side, it really goes much further into data analytics, into process outsourcing, into product development and portfolio management. So we're really getting deeper and deeper into the value chain of an insurer, because they realize that we're creating win-win situations. And that's something that is basically one of the principles of our company. When we first founded it, we said, okay, we think the discussion is much nicer with someone that you bring value to. And then you say, okay, with each, let's say, risk that is underwritten, or with each client that we have on our platform, you earn, all sides earn more money than before. And so it's easier, the discussion, say, hey, out of this client, you had $1,000 more, and then I say, okay, so I take half of it, and then for both sides it's a good deal. And that's something what we are creating also for insurers, when we're helping them with data analytics, with all these different areas where they didn't have anything before, which just say, hey, this is just awesome, and just helps us in all these different areas.
Mm-hmm. Getting a little bit more into your company, because you raised venture capital.
Yep.
And what was your experience with raising venture capital? Was it like tiresome? Was it, which would actually surprise me, easy? And what are you going to do with the money?
Yeah. So actually it was, it was a hard thing to do, because actually when you talk to investors...
Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah, what a surprise. But I think it was even harder when you come to an industry when no one actually really has a clue about it. So in the insurance industry, from a digitization and the startup perspective, is very, very young. So when you're talking to investors, one of the first things in the beginning, they said, yeah, we are good at with insurance industry because we're good at fintech. And in the beginning, InsurTech was seen as part of fintech, and it still took some time before people actually made it a difference between it and made it different sectors. And so it just started that we have investors raising funds only for InsurTech. And that also shows how little experience they all had with InsurTech. And so when you talk to investors and you see their first investments that they made, most of them actually already died, because everyone thought, oh yeah, InsurTech is probably like every other industry. So you just put money into Google and it's like e-commerce, and then it's sold, and done. You grow big. Yeah. And all of them failed or pivoted and so on. And so
it's not linear scaling.
Yeah, that's right. So it really takes some time before this industry actually gets disrupted, or actually before it gets digitized even. And because one of the things that people need to learn, it's just a very, very different market, very, very different industry. And therefore the investors had some really hard time to understand what we are doing. And so in the beginning it was really, really tough to explain them why we think it is not like all the other industries. Because the first reaction from all of them was, and then you need to go this, do this and do this and that. It's like in other industries. We also always said, no, it's not right. We need to do it differently. We need to, for example, go via brokers. They said, no, in the digital world, no one needs a broker anymore. No one needs an intermediary. And we said, yeah, you still need it. Insurance is not sexy. It's not a pull product. It's a push product. So you need someone that pushes out there and sells it to someone. And therefore, you always will need them. No. Okay. Then 2 years later, people understood, oh, actually, he was right. And so it just took 2 years of discussion. So in the first discussions we had with investors, they all felt very, very intelligent and strong and made us feel stupid. Luckily, we had some investors that believed in us all the time. And then now after some more time and after really the market picking up and the market learning, also the investor learning, this round was really easy. So in the end, I was talking mainly to 10 investors that I knew from before. And then I had 3 offers in the end, and even a couple more that said, okay, what can we do? And we just pushed them back. And so it was really, really one of these experiences that you like from fundraising, but you don't hear very often. And I'm actually quite happy that it did go that way.
What is your best recommendation for a startup out there who's never talked to investors when they start fundraising? What should they do? Before you ask, no, we don't do easy questions here.
I think it's one thing that always helps is to talk to people early enough and without fundraising. Because when you talk to them in the beginning, it's like when you go out on a date or when you go out in a club, and when someone has a feeling, you directly go for it and you're really aggressive and you have just one clear goal of taking her home. Then most people get defensive. But if in the same day, if you just talk to them, say, hey, we're just starting a startup and we just had our first business angels or our own money or whatever and so on, and so everything's going well, and then it's really less aggressive. If you go to them directly and say, okay, and I want to pitch now because I want the money, then it always feels a little bit needy and too aggressive. When we start a relationship with them, when you start to kind of like getting them interested, getting them to learn more about you and about your business, your idea, then you also find out who would be a good fit, and they learn who is a good fit, and they can give good recommendations, and they start to trust you. Because the reason why we are not liquidated yet, but we are now on the best position that we ever had, is because we had some people that trusted in us, and that it was not the typical followership of VCs that talk to each other and say, yeah, that's not a good idea. It's going to take some time. And then they realize it was a good idea, but they didn't realize it yet or before. And then you need someone who trusts you and who backs you. And that's probably the best part about it.
Mm-hmm. And what are you guys going to do with the money? Except for buying a PlayStation or something.
Yeah, so first we have a nice closing party, and then half of it is gone. And then, probably not. But what we're going to do is actually invest a lot into people, mm-hmm. Because that's the main resource actually that we have. And so we're tripling the size of our team. Mainly in Germany, but also starting with other countries.
For example,
France, Belgium, Netherlands would be on our first priority list. But we're also looking at the US, at Asia. These three, let's say, possibilities are out there for us. And it's just a matter of sequence for us.
Mm-hmm. I see. And maybe one of my last questions. You guys are here located in Frankfurt.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nice. There's a lot of business around here. But did you feel ever an advantage or disadvantage to be located here in Frankfurt? And what would you expect, like, the government, the regulators do to enable more startups in the fintech insurance space like you guys?
Yeah. So we actually like it here in Frankfurt. It's also two-sided. On the one hand side, Frankfurt is really cool because the city is really, there's a lot of traffic just in the city. You're really close to all the other cities because Germany is quite decentral. So that means you have in Cologne, Hamburg, Berlin, Munich, Stuttgart, and wherever you have the different customers that you want to meet. It's not like in UK where you have London and there you have basically, let's say, the majority of the businesses. Therefore this really helps. And also what's helping is, that we didn't look too startup-y. And, what that means is, when we are talking to insurers, they always thought like, oh, because they're so traditional, they always liked it that we're in Frankfurt because it didn't sound like, oh, this Berlin hipster startup stuff, what you do. But we always also framed ourselves as the young company, a really young, fresh company. Mm-hmm. That sounds different to them than, okay, we're a startup and we're really fragile.
Out of your job.
Exactly.
Yeah, disruption. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so on. So this really helped, and Frankfurt sounds much better on this. On the also when it comes to recruiting, because from an international perspective, Frankfurt has a really, really great reputation. And therefore, a lot of people said, okay, it's cool to come to Frankfurt. It's better than Berlin, maybe, or yeah. And in Berlin, when I talk to other founders, they say, okay, it's in a startup hub. So especially all the techies or the good guys that want to be in startup space, they got lots of offers, and they just they experienced it. Everyone that I know experienced that. Oh yeah, and that this one time that my developer just didn't come anymore. He just took another offer because there's so many offers out there, and so it's really a lot of fluctuation and so on. When you ask about the government and what is not the good thing about Frankfurt. It is not a typical startup hub. And so you don't have this large community, also investors community here. You have a lot of business community, which helps, but investor community is not so big. And there are different, let's say, initiatives to change that. And also the government is trying to change a little bit. But bureaucracy in general, in Germany in general, is really hard for startups. And so this is probably something where we think it could be a little bit nicer to be in Berlin or even in some other startup hubs where they are pushing it. I think in France there's actually a lot of going on to support startups. We would hope that in Germany in general and Frankfurt in specific, it would be a little bit more of, let's say, support from the government just to get this going,
like,
and flowing.
Medial outreach support, financial support, help with recruiting, relocating employees, or all of it?
Yeah, all of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so but I think mostly it's something of making it easier for us to attract the people here and get the money, because obviously for the government it's good for us now, or for them now, that we have that much money. Mm-hmm. Because it means we are hiring people, that means we're also performing quite well, that means we're creating taxes, which is also again nice, and making it more attractive, more innovative, and so on, and therefore good support here would be highly appreciated.
Great. Anything important we may have forgotten?
Yeah, I think one thing that I want to mention to the founders out there, because it is easily said, but you cannot hear it often enough, is stay focused, stay out of all the events that you can get, because startup is not about a startup hipster life. It's about creating business, and it's not about hiring, firing. It's not about just disrupting, just because of disrupting. It's not for making it the best for investors. It's making a good business. It's making yourself happy. And if you're only after the getting fast, quick returns, then it's probably not the best way for you to do it. It's rather about building something, creating something for you, for your employees, and also for your environment. And it's not about the events. It's not about just raising big, and that's important. It's more important you believe in yourself, you're happy, and you create a vision.
Just raising big and have a big valuation. We just had the case of WeWork that it don't always pay off. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you as a guest.
Thank you.
Everybody who'd like to learn more, go down here in the show notes. There's a link to our website. There's a blog post where you will find the link of your LinkedIn profile, everything we talked about, Wikipedia links, and as well as the company website.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot. It was fun.
My pleasure.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.